So, obviously, to a certain extent, he's probably being typecast. And at the same time, even going back to his really early stuff, there's him being in the movie, in the TV show Taxi, which
Yep.
not only features again the yellow cab like we have in Roger Rabbit, it features the 59th Street Bridge, which I've talked about many times being. How do I explain this? The concept of the first Spider-Man movie where they were going to have they had that trailer of the webs between the two towers.
Yes.
And so here we have
Yes, yes.
Spider-Man connected to a Stargate. They have to take that out of the movie because of, or pull the trailer because of 9/11. And then what they end up doing instead is showing Spider-Man fighting the Green Goblin. On a they call it the Brooklyn Bridge, but it has this red trolley next to it. And the red trolley in New York, there's actually only one of them. It's not next to the Brooklyn Bridge, it's next to the 59th Street Bridge. And so they do this weird thing where they're like they call it the Brooklyn Bridge because it's more famous, but then they put the red trolley there, which actually is the Roosevelt Island Tram, etc., etc., etc. Point, long story short, next to that tram in real life, there is another black slab building that looks exactly like the monolith. So you have this, like, they moved it from one Stargate monolith building to another. And in the opening credits of Taxi, that's what you see is them driving over the 59th Street Bridge. So you already have this Spider-Man Stargate in the opening credits of Taxi. And there's an episode of Taxi where. Jim is asked, like, what is his fantasy? And his fantasy is to be abducted by a UFO.
That's intense. Alan, so before I want to hear more about that, but just before you continue, you probably already know this, but so obviously in the context of that situation, the Green Goblin is played by
Ozgot, yeah.
shoot.
The Green Goblin's the actual.
It's well he's
James Franco. Right.
yeah James Franco. So obviously his name is Osborne or
Right,
Oz, so
exactly.
and then James Franco is as Oz, so it really
Yeah.
lends a lot to the scene.
Okay, here's I'm gonna take this on a weird ass tangent. I watched all right, I have full disclosure here. I had a really intense psychedelic experience about 2 weeks ago that really kind of burned me out, and I was just like overwhelmed, and I was trying to think. I wanted to watch the stupidest movie I could watch to just relax, calm down, and like whatever. So I end up watching, I don't know if anyone's ever seen it. It was a movie actually directed by Stephen King called Maximum Overdrive. It's basically all
Yeah.
these cars and trucks come to life and start killing people. All right, so I'm like,
Sounds awful.
it's pretty fucking bad. It's really fucking bad. But here's the deal. The leader of the vehicles that come to life is this truck with a giant Spider-Man Green Goblin mask on it. So, and it's not like supposed to look like the Green Goblin. It's literally the Spider-Man's Green Goblin mask on this truck. And that's kind of the leader of the trucks. Well, the whole thing is that this green mist appears over the sky, and all the cars come to life, and it ends with the text on the screen says that like the US military shoots down a UFO or something. That, like, basically it was like an alien UFO was controlling all the ships. So here we have our UFOs and aliens. We have our Green Goblin, Osborn. But what we also have is the idea of remote-controlled vehicles, that it's actually this alien spaceship is controlling the vehicles. And I want you to think about the idea of, so Maximum Overdrive, which the truck with the Green Goblin mask actually says, it's a toy truck, and it says on it, delivering a load of joy, which can't help but make me think of Jake Kotz's Jupiter Joy, all this sort of stuff. We have the Spider-Man movie. The Green Goblin has his remote-controlled glider, right? So he kind of controls his glider also by remote control. And then we have the conspiracy theory around 9/11 that they weren't actual planes that were flown into the building, or that someone had taken control of the airplanes and basically flew the planes via remote control. I could take this further into the idea of the rise of the internet and Terminator and all this sort of stuff as this 9/11 Stargate moment where technology really rises. But not even going there, I just want to point this out, the idea of Spider-Man already connected to the Twin Towers with the Green Goblin remote-controlled planes, and here we have Maximum Overdrive again with a truck with the Green Goblin's mask that's remote-controlled by a UFO delivering a load of joy. I had to share that with you guys.
Delivering a load of joy sounds a little inappropriate.
Yeah, I think it's I think it was meant to be sexual innuendo, and at the same time, I can't but help but think of the established synchromistic angle of that.
That's cool. Yeah. which is the movie with Richard Dreyfuss where he makes contact? It's pretty famous.
Aliens. No, yeah, Close Encounters.
Yeah, Close Encounters. I think it's brief, but in that movie, the aliens take control of the cars in a limited capacity, but kind of similar.
Do they? That's interesting. You might be right.
I don't think they actually drive them around, but I think like when he's first getting the inclination that there's a ET presence, you know, they start turning on his radio and turning on his lights and taking control of his engine and that sort of thing.
You're absolutely right. I forgot about that. Absolutely, yeah. Holy shit.
You guys know things in Donnie Darko with 88? So the movie takes place in 1988, and Frank tells Donnie that the world will end in 28 days, 6 hours, 42 minutes and 12 seconds, and then if you add those numbers together, the sum is 88.
Huh.
And things where, like, you know, where Samantha asks when she's going to have kids, and Donnie says not until 8th grade, and then Donnie tells his therapist that his dog died when he was 8, and there's this 888 all throughout the film over and over again. The film itself was filmed, so the film was shot in 8 days, which is also the time span of, okay, so 10/2/88 to 10/30/88 of the movie. So the length of an average human pregnancy is 10 lunar months or 280 days. So they played it. So it's everything. The film was first screened at, I'm reading this, by the way. The film was first screened at the Sundance Film Festival on January 19, 2001. It was released in theaters in October 26, 2000, exactly 180 days later. Donnie Darko was released on October 26, 2001. The director's cut of the film was released on July 3rd, 2004, exactly 1,001 days later. July 3rd, April, May, that's 7/23. That's serious. That's the first day.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
The first scene in the movie is an homage to Martin Scorsese's The Last Temptation of Christ. But then this is, okay, so...
Which is also playing in, yeah, it's the double feature.
But then the thing is that he accuses Swayze as being the Antichrist, right?
Mm-hmm.
While William Dafoe, who plays Christ in The Last Temptation of Christ, is in that Lars Van Trier's film, Antichrist. Have you seen that? One of the fucking craziest movies I've ever come across in my life. But there's this whole thing going on there. So
Who directed it, David? It's called Antichrist?
Lars Van Trier. He did Melancholia. Directors that's alive.
I'll add it to my list.
So there's a whole thing with E.T. and Drew Barrymore in this movie. So the I Cried to Grandma's Death house is an homage to Steven Spielberg's E.T. And then Drew Barrymore starred in that. And so Drew Barrymore is obviously in this film. So there's, the shit goes on and on.
Sure. And think about, this brings us back to the Kevin Halcott conversation, but the whole idea of Sirius, you have the dog star following the rabbit down the rabbit hole, is actually following it into the underworld. We have the idea of, in Poltergeist, that she's, if you look at the Poltergeist poster, even, it's Channel 42 that she's watching. You have the idea that Patrick Swayze was in the movie Ghost, where he encounters the ghost at 42nd Street, is where he learns to master his deadliness, or however you want to word that. Go ahead.
They're watching the football game on Channel 42 in the film. And then, you know, Lan in real life, Jo Beth Williams, she dies right after the football game that's in 1988, that's in a poster. So she has a Super Bowl poster in her room of a Super Bowl that hasn't happened for 1988. She gets sick during the game, that when it happens years later. And she dies shortly thereafter. On the way to the hospital, in complete conjunction with, like, that it's fucking ridiculous. And then it was Colorado versus San Diego. The film, she dies in San Diego. The film is filmed in San Diego. Colorado is The Shining. The television set reads 237, When the Spirits Come Out. It's Channel 42 when they're watching the football game and they're jumping up and down. It's too much.
Well, if you even look, she has, because I was looking at the movie poster, she has next to her, she's watching Channel 42, and she has a little stuffed bear next to her, which obviously all the people have made a big deal out of the bears in The Shining.
Yeah, Jesus Christ. It goes, like, that shit is something, that's a real example of something that I can't quite reconcile. That's like, along with, like, you point out, Joe, that the guy who does the voice for fucking Roger Rabbit in Who Framed Roger Rabbit is the guy that tells Marty about the clock tower?
Yeah. Yes.
And Roger Rabbit's in the window next to the Gray's Almanac. That's just insane.
Yeah.
There's insane shit going on. This is why, like, these are examples of where I'm like, okay, yeah, we're doing something here.
Yeah, I like you saying that it's unreconcilable.
Like, I'm trying to,
like, there. It's like they're unreconcilable similarities.
Yes, exactly.
As opposed to differences.
Yeah, what do you do with that? Sometimes I think what we do here is just like, hey, this is kind of weird, check this out. And then sometimes it's like, no, there is something really profound some sort of obvious correlation that, you know, make of it what you will.
Yeah, but I feel like I'm, like, feeling... you know what you said there, David, with just, like, it's just too thick. It's just, like, it's unreconcilable. Like, I can't reconcile it. It's just throw my hands up. Yeah. Anyways. Yeah. So, Alan, I just wanted to point out also that in, so you said how in Back to the Future 1, he drives into the movie theater, and in 3, he drives into the screen, and in 1, 2, No, in 1, the first time that he travels in the mall, he, instead of driving into the movie screen, he actually drives into the photo booth.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Bill and Ted.
Yes. I think with those three, we can say that it's something, I mean.
Yeah, I hadn't made the...
Well, maybe there's something intentional here. It's got to be intentional. Driving into the movie theater, driving into the movie screen, driving into the photo booth. It's just too obvious.
And then just to take it a little further, as you have this again, Kevin Halcott's covered this, and I know you've covered some of this, but you have the idea of as soon as he goes through the photo booth, what does he get lands on his screen but a scarecrow, which is the idea that he's in Oz.
Yeah.
In The Wiz, yep. As David was talking about earlier, The Wiz, the scarecrow is played by Michael Jackson, who also played Captain EO. You have this idea of like the master of the rainbow or going over the rainbow. Yep. Then you have the woman in Poltergeist, Zelda Rubinstein, who was also in a movie called Under the Rainbow. She's also in the Skittles commercial of Taste the Rainbow, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Like, we could keep playing that game all day, but it seems to me the newest piece of information here that, and I think is highly profound, is, as you say, he goes through the photo booth. I hadn't realized that, but that's very poetic.
Yeah. Michael very Jackson, strange.
In his hometown, there is a giant plaque to him made to be a model of the monolith from 2001. Have you seen that?
No.
To yeah. Michael Jackson, you said?
Yeah, in front of his old grew up in or something, maybe. I forget. But there's an enormous plaque that is a monolith. That's like, and it's a whole reference to him being like the moon watcher because he's the moonwalker.
Oh, God, yeah. And, of course, Michael J. Fox, MJ, Michael Jackson.
Yeah. The photo booth is called the Fox booth or something, too.
Really?
Not that really connects at all. But
it does, though. It totally does.
Yes.
The fucking... Why, like, I feel like he's cat... Like, I don't know how this should, like, do they put him there because his fucking last name is 666, or did they put him there because he's the right person for the role? Like, or does it just so happen that he's the right person for the role, and he happens to be the fucking Babylonian Sun Square in action? So
who was the guy that was originally supposed to play Marty McFly?
I think Drew Barrymore.
No, it was like some other team.
Yeah, that would have been nice. Shit. What the hell is his name? Eric Stoltz.
Yeah, okay.
Killing Zoe, huh?
Yeah, it seems like it was more than like he's our man for the role. Michael J. Fox, I mean, because they shot the film for like 6 weeks or something, and then pulled Eric Stoltz. It was like they were really hell-bent on getting Michael J. Fox in there. You know, could be interpreted as a little bit, you know, ritualistic. Like, we absolutely need this man in there. It costs the studio a lot of money to do that. So it seems like maybe there was more involved than just trying to make a good movie.
Well, bear in mind that at the same time Back to the Future comes out, Michael J. Fox is also working on Teen Wolf, where he wears the jersey number 42, and he is a wolf, which can't help but make me think again of Sirius. As you mentioned, the whole 723 thing, you have that he's wearing, that he becomes a wolf. Just as, again, I'm Lupin the Third in Castle Cagliostro is called the wolf. I can't help but think of Wolf, Dog Star, etc. And that Doc Brown even says, when this baby hits 88 miles per hour, you're going to see some serious shit.
Yes.
And it, while he's sending a dog, he's teleporting a dog.
Yeah, it's pretty thick.
So I mean, yeah, but like, where is it ritualistic? Is it just engaging the archetypes? Because it seems to me, Robert Zemeckis certainly knows how to play with archetypes. And there are things that make me feel like a lot of the imagery is, for lack of a better term, is esoteric. He's intentionally including esoteric imagery. But Jason has pointed out, you know, the idea of Marty going through the two screens, and as you say, the photo booth, he's connected it to, you know, exiting Plato's cave and all this sort of stuff. Even in Back to the Future 3, after he goes through the movie screen, he then yep. parks the car in a cave. So we just have this sort of... Oh, I'm sorry, he unearths it from a cave, goes through the screen and then puts it back in the cave. So we have this idea of the movie theater being Plato's cave and all this sort of stuff. So there's like poetic use there, and then there are things where I talked about how in Back to the Future 3, he keeps talking to his love interest. I'm sorry, Doc Brown keeps talking to his love interest about how much he likes Jules Verne, and he keeps talking about, and she asks him, "Do you think men will go to the moon?" And they keep talking about going to the moon, the moon, the moon. And he would actually, I think he names his children Jules and Verne, right?
Yes, absolutely. For me, I think it is ritualistic from the standpoint of, I feel like Zemeckis has to be involved. Spielberg has to be involved. I mean, I don't hold too strongly to that. It's just kind of like my personal, not opinion, but like what I prefer to think, because I don't want to say that it's my opinion, like I would defend it, but it's just, I feel, because maybe I'm just personally attached to the movie, but it's just so incredibly thick with what I would determine to be like intentional ritual. Like, to me, that parallels 9/11. Like, just as an example, on top of all the bullshit that's already been discussed about it. But so I've talked at length about how it's an Olympian ceremony, which at its core is the celebration of Zeus, or the savior, Jesus, if you want to make that connection, that archetype. Coming into being and defeating the dark energies or whatever of Saturn or sorry, are you guys following me here?
Absolutely.
So
yes.
It's the yeah. Okay.
And
so,
if anyone listening is confused, if anyone listening is confused, go watch Joe's videos. Christ, our Lloyd, our Christ bearer videos will make this all very clear.
Yeah. So. The scene of, or the whole idea of this culminating with lightning destroying time and time traveling and driving into the theater, and it's all has to do with the Olympic ceremony. And to me, it becomes more than sync. It becomes ritual, because the movie was, basically concocted, put together. It was shot with Eric Stoltz, but then pooled, so there was delays. But it was done in the early parts of 1985. And so you can imagine that all the groundwork was being laid in 1984, which is when the Olympics were going on. So it's like,
and
the movie...
You probably know that the 1984 Olympic ceremony ended with a UFO landing, right?
You know what? I didn't know that, but that just adds more to it. It's just,
if you could still find it, you could still find it online. Check this out. 1984 Olympic ceremony, the closing ceremonies of the 1984 Olympics. What they do is they do this thing where everyone's holding up these blue lights. They have this UFO land, and then this giant alien gets out. While they're playing, I think, Thus Spake Zarathustra, from 2001, and I'm pretty sure that's the music they're playing, and a spaceship lands, and this alien gets out and says, "This is my message for all of humanity." Basically, like 2010, the year we make contact, where he says, like, enjoy the games together, world peace, blah, blah, blah. Like, it's this alien lands and gives his message to humanity. So if you have, right after that, this Olympic ceremony coming out, you guys keep talking. I gotta hold on one second. Go ahead though.
So it's also Back to the Future takes place in, obviously it's filmed in Los Angeles, and the clock tower scene all goes on in LA, and that's where the 1984 Olympics were held. It was just in Los Angeles. It's just like, to me, like the chances of all that coinciding there is just too powerful for it not to have been intentional. It's like this movie depicting the Olympics in 1985 is released in the same location as the 1984 Olympics. It's just too much,
You've seen the Rick Clay presentation? You know what I'm talking about? It was a red...
The witch play, David? You cut out for just a second.
Rick Clay? You know Rick Clay? He was... He did the red ice cube quite a while back, and that was mainly focused on the Olympic Games. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. No, I wish I would have seen it. I mean, listen to it. I never got a chance.
Very profound that he died right after he did the interview. Most likely.
Did he?
Suicide. And I would highly recommend checking that out. It's just completely loaded. And he shows how Lord of the Rings plays in, J.R.R. Tolkien's Lord of the Rings plays into the Olympics and all this stuff with, like, the water ring. And how that's represented, and there's basic it everything that we're talking about here ties in so directly. Like, as soon as somebody starts talking about the Olympics, I'm immediately thinking about Stargates. So, like,
what are you talking about? Right. How in the movie Contact she passes through the spinning rings?
Oh, that too. I mean, I tie that to that. Okay, so the Divine Pymander, you know, Hermes Megustus, like the Greek text that supposedly came from the Egyptians,
sure,
where they have the story, the Adam looks into these rings, I believe there's seven, and he gets enveloped, he like falls down into these rings, like he's mesmerized by these rings, and he goes through the rings, and then he tries to look back, and he can't find his way back, but I was actually referring to Rick Clay. You've seen Rick Clay?
Yeah, mm-hmm.
His red ice thing, and how, like, you guys are talking about the Olympics, and I can't help, because of him, connect that with Stargates. There's something very, I mean, that's an enormous ritual that a whole energy goes into, and there's some very specific archetypal things, you know, set up there. So, yes.
Right, right. So, yeah, thanks for the tip, David. I'll definitely go check that out.
Yeah, Rick Clay was one of the early guys who really started pointing out a lot of the 11/11 stuff. I mean, if you listen to his stuff now, it's like stuff that's been covered a million times since. But he was someone who was really starting to bring a lot of this stuff out. And unfortunately, you know, there are theories that he was murdered or something for revealing this stuff. But I don't really buy that. And speaking to people who knew him, he was very depressed and very paranoid, and the idea, and the people who know him say that his suicide likely was actually a suicide.
There's a going through the subliminal synchros that's talking about O'Rourke, and he explains it so well. I've become a huge fan of this guy, but he keeps adding things to his old blogs, which is just awesome. I love it how he just, they're massive to begin with, and then he just, and everything is just so on point. Shows here, Carol Ann Heather O'Rourke was the Rainbow Bright girl. She's in a Rainbow Bright commercial. I'm just saying, like, they couldn't, and like the whole thing with what side of the rainbow are we on anyway? Like, they just don't. There's something huge going on there. Sorry. Jumping around quite a bit.
What's that?
Joe, look at the subliminal synchrosphere.
No, I've never been there. It's a blog?
Yeah, it's a blog, and it's become one of my very, very favorite blogs. I'm a huge fan of this guy. I think he's great. So.
Subliminal synchrosphere. All right, writing it down. That'll be my afternoon homework.
Yeah, it's a lot. Like, if you wanted to tackle this, I mean, you could keep yourself busy with nothing else for, like, a month.
Is it like a covered cover type read, or can I just jump in anywhere?
Yeah, you can jump in anywhere. Yeah. Totally. So, and it's all, a lot of it you'll be familiar with, but then he'll work on the same lines that we're all working on, but then he just ties things together so perfectly. It's really something else.
Cool. You know, I always have to admire, the guys who blog well, because it's not something that I do well. And so kind of tying it back to the media, and how media can portray spirit. You know, obviously what we're doing with Sync is heavily connected to discovering the underlying spirit of, you know, everything, you could say. So it's kind of like different people are choosing different mediums in order to convey that spirit. So interesting, I think.
Totally.
You know what I think would be cool is if somebody like made audio tapes like to take into the movie theater, like you were saying that did one of you say this? Maybe I heard this somewhere else, but like a director made an audio tape that you could download and bring into his movie when you watched it in the theater. I think it was done for shit. I can't remember what movie, but
I don't know what you're talking about. Headphones. Yeah.
It would be cool if somebody made, like, David, for example, like, if you went to watch, like, you know, The Great and Powerful Oz when it came out and you posted, like, your live comments on it and people could just, like, when I went to the movies then I could just download your comments and put one headphone in and listen to them. So
it's funny you say that because what I was just thinking about was we talk about the idea of Sirius and telepathic communication from Sirius is one of my favorite subjects. I'm thinking about the fact that in Back to the Future 1, Marty, as the spaceman, puts the headphones over his dad's ears. And it's this idea of, like, so that he can hear the message of the alien, is sort of placing the headphones mm-hmm. on. And in one way, I'm thinking of it as putting on the goggles in the green glasses in Oz. But on the other side, I'm thinking of it as this idea of receiving the alien message. There's guys like Philip K. Dick and Timothy Leary and Robert Anton Wilson, all these guys who have claimed contact from Sirius. And then you have this idea of in Back to the Future where he gives him this message as a spaceman. I can't help but see those as connected. And I just watched the movie Flight of the Navigator in the last few days, and it's explicit. It's explicitly about Sirius. It's explicitly Masonic. And again, I don't say these things as a bad thing. I know a lot of people see Masonic as somewhat evil or nefarious, but I'm not saying it that way. It just very obviously has the signature, a Masonic signature on it. And it's very much about Sirius, and it goes so far as to actually have them put things into the kid's brain, that the alien actually downloads these star maps into the kid's brain. And it's the idea of, you know, getting the alien message. And something we've talked about a few times recently is the idea that in the movie Contact, they actually get the alien message, but they can't perceive it at first. They have to learn to think like an alien. It's almost like walking like an Egyptian, right? So, like, you got to think like the alien.
Yeah.
So in this respect, if you can get the message, but then to decode it is a whole other step. And I'm curious, like, if anyone wants to run with any of that, the idea of Marty actually putting the headphones on, the idea of the contact, and also having to shift our perception somewhat to actually decode it correctly.
Well, I would say that if anything comes close to that, like in our experience on Earth, it would have to be, well, it could be decoding these ridiculous connections in movies. You know, if aliens were trying to contact humans and embed star maps or great wisdom, they would probably do it in media or in movies. So, and I, you know, learning to think like that is probably pretty dramatically different from normal ways of thinking. So I would say that, like, just pursuing sync is probably along those lines.
Who was the sync book to that? We've had him on the show. I'm spacing right now. No pun intended. But there's the guy all of those adoptees.
Mike Cleland.
Right. So he was saying that there's been a repeated instance over and over and over again of people, because he asked a question. He's like, at synchronicity. and to people who have had this experience, and like that most people apparently have the same thing to say, that like sync is the language of the intelligences. And I found it really interesting, like you had mentioned, like Close Encounters of the Third Kind, which itself is based off of actual accounts. That's how a lot of that film. And like, but when you said Bud, you said it all. And
hey guys, I'll be back in 90 seconds.
Okay? No problem.
They're making this enormous tower, which is the Devil's Tower, which I love because it looks like, it reminds me of the Devil's card in Crowley's deck with the rings around it, which they refer to the side of the alien landing as the dark side of the moon in that film. But I like how he's, like, his relationship to, like, his mashed potatoes, like, how he's forming this mountain. That's like a great example of like that he sees the thing before he's seen it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's always this problem with sync that comes up repeatedly where people say, and they have every right to say it because it's totally true on a certain level, is that like, well, if you're looking for something, you'll find that thing everywhere, right? Like if you're looking for a number, of course you're going to see it. But there still becomes a question of like, well, what is the probability that even if you're looking for something, how often will it come up, or how directly will it come up? Because you're like, oh, I'm looking for this. And so you're like, well, of course you're going to find what you're looking for because you're looking for it. And so you are not taking account of all the other things that aren't related, but you're only taking account of the things that are. But like what they're there with, like, he's looking at his mashed potatoes and he feels the urge to form his mashed potatoes in the shape of the and so like he has, like, you get what I'm getting at?
Absolutely,
like
it's yeah,
really interesting there.
Yeah, I think without a doubt there's the idea of, again, this is the idea of like getting the message, and then also getting the message is different from actually understanding the message.
Right.
And that I think what we're learning how to do here is a little bit of decoding the message, because of, as you just say, it's like you're seeing it before you see it, and then to try and figure out what the hell does it mean. And I think that's ultimately where we get into all these debates too, is like, you know, subliminal synchrosphere, who says it's all part of a Masonic conspiracy. You know, there's the idea of someone saying it's all about joy. You know, maybe a Jake Kotz is saying it's all about joy, and a Mark LeClaire saying it's showing you the futility of life. You know, it's like these are, you can decode them in all sorts of different ways. And often what I think is like, well, obvious, you know, there might be so many different ways to decode it. And then there's also the idea that maybe it's also that we haven't quite gotten it yet.
Yeah. I'm looking right at the, I found the part in this little synchrosphere as I was scrolling through it of Heather O'Rourke, which I can't fucking believe. But they show you the poster. It is 1988. And the film was filmed in 1982. So, film, 1988 Super Bowl poster, and the Super Bowl that it's a poster for, that ultimately ended up happening, was the Washington Redskins versus the Denver Broncos. But the Super Bowl took place in San Diego, and Poltergeist is filmed in San Diego. The little Heather O'Rourke died in San Diego. The Super Bowl took place on January 31st, 1988. She took ill, January 31st, 1988. So on January 31st, 1988, a Sunday, O'Rourke, who was 12, also remember that there's the 12 stuff all throughout the beginning of Poltergeist. They're all wearing 12 jerseys. The little boy looking up at the tree is wearing the 12 jerseys. People on the who are shouting in front of the game are wearing 12 jerseys. Okay, suddenly became ill again, vomiting and unable to keep anything down. The next morning, Monday morning, she collapsed while preparing to leave for the hospital. yeah, what the fuck? I feel like I have to bring this up again because this is an example of, like, I mean, like, fictive stuff, like, you're talking about, like, time travel. To have a poster of something that hasn't happened yet that will be extremely significant on, like, on that level in real life is just, that's, like, how do they do that? Oh, the score of the game was 42-10. Washington Redskins with 42, Denver Broncos with 10. Remember, 10 in The Shining with channel 10 is actually the point at which, if you play The Shining forwards and backwards simultaneously, the point of intersection is Holleran staring at the screen on channel 10.
Mm-hmm.
Which is interesting. Just saying.
or 142. Just all the digits without the zero.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah. Four, 2-10, that's, yeah. 1-4-2, that's, that's kind of a... Yeah. Sorry, I just went in there because I was looking at it.
Yeah, so what do we make of, you know, God, so does this... I know for some people this implies like a foreknowledge almost of, like you said, how do they do that? You know, is the thing to take from this that someone actually knows? Is this a ritual? And even if it is, do you know the outcome of your ritual? Are there unintended consequences of your ritual?
Are they doing shit and not knowing what the hell is going to come out of it? Like, that makes more sense. They're like, it seems like there's these intentional things. You got, like, Darth Vader right there below the poster and the Star Wars poster on the other side. I mean, the Poltergeist 3 was being ready to be released, which she stars in, and then she dies before it's released, and so obviously the film gets dedicated to her. But, like, the poster for Poltergeist 3 is her, it's only her, looking up at this giant tower. It's a skyscraper with light. And it's like, it just looks like the devil card. I mean, the tower card. It's like lightning striking the top of this tower. Like, that's what you're looking at. And it's like...
Which, of course, brings us back to... Back to the Future. The idea of the lightning-struck tower.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah. This is... And it's a clock tower, so you have this whole thing with that's the key to the time travel, right?
Yeah.
Or David, didn't you say last time how you were connecting the lightning striking the tower to the Kabbalah?
That was actually me saying the idea that the if you look at the clock tower, there's two pillars with a triangle on top, with the clock being the sort of spear at the top. And that the lightning comes down between those twin pillars into the flux capacitor, which is also shaped like these sphere interconnecting spheres. So, I was saying that you have in Kabbalah, you have this concept of the lightning flash of creation that comes from the top of the tree down into the bottom, of spirit into matter. Afterwards, Jason Barrera pointed out that this is. If you look at the tarot card, the magician, this is very much signified that Doc Brown would be this sort of magician who is calling down the spirit from the air. I also, if someone wants to actually go there, is that in the book Foucault's Pendulum, they devote these like three pages to explaining how the workings of a car are like the sephira in the Tree of Life. So, what's up?
Read that part. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, so it's like, you know, there's this idea of something, you know, some definite sort of overlap there, that these things would be representative. It's just, again, it's just a question of, like, at what point is it intentional? At what point is it not? I don't. And again, and if there's a if it's important to make that distinction or not.
Right.
Yeah.
Well,
Yeah, I like the idea of the lightning striking the tower too as being like the radio tower or like the TV tower where like the lightning is the signal or the the electric signal of information that conjures the spirit down, and displays it in matter on the TV. Sort of a similar thread there.
Yeah, I totally get that.
Heather O'Rourke as Carol Ann is like totally like another version of Danny. But his name in real life is Danny Lloyd, right? So like Danny Torrance is Danny Lloyd. So like just like Jack is Jack Torrance, he's Jack Nicholson, his son's name is Danny. So they let you know that it's not a mistake that they're naming the characters the names of the actors, right? Like they casted it that way or whatever, but like they wanted that to be Danny, and then obviously it's Lloyd is the bartender in The Shining. But isn't it interesting then that you have this whole thing with like Christopher Lloyd as the Christ bearer, right? Like Lloyd is bearer, is that how it works? The one who
Lloyd
bears.
was what you, the name was just basically to signify that he is an embodiment of the Christ archetype or the Savior archetype.
Lloyd, like the last name Lloyd, what is that? Does it?
It means holy man. I think it's Irish or it might be Welsh, but its etymology is it means like a holy spirited man.
Well, it's interesting to think of Danny and The Shining as such, with that being his last name. And then Lloyd, the bartender, who says that I would, Jack is like, I would give my soul for a drink, and then he gets served a drink by the holy man. Kind of interesting. The hair of the dog that bit me. Words of wisdom, Lloyd.
Right, that it would be coming from a holy man.
What's that?
Is it that it would be coming from a holy man?
Yeah, I never thought of that before just now. So I'm thinking that that's kind of interesting.
Looks like we lost Joe again.
Really? Okay, well. I'll be back in just a second.
There's a man I found could bring us all joy. There's a doctor I found could cure the boy. A doctor I found can cure the boy. There's a man I found could remove his sorrow. He lives in this town. Let's see him tomorrow. Let's see him tomorrow.
Well, David, I'm sorry, but I missed almost that whole bit.
I think David actually stepped away for a second. Well,
Oh, did
yeah,
he?
while we were trying to reconnect you, we just sort
Out
of
of
put.
fresh.
No. Dude, don't worry about it, man. For real.
Yeah, cool.
We've had this, we've had worse than this. We've had a few people who have pretty regular issues, like
Yeah.
Jason Barrera. We're never able to keep him on for more than 15 minutes at a time. So,
Right.
Too bad, actually.
Joe was asking. He missed some of what you were saying there at the end about Lloyd, from The Shining.
Oh yeah, saying that I find it interesting that if it means holy man, that you have like I also took it, which I'm not alone in this. I believe even Mark LeClaire talks about this, but others talking about it as well. That when you have the bartender being Lloyd. The fact that they let you know by having like that the son's name is Danny in Torrance in the film, but then he's Danny Lloyd in real life. The fact that his father's name is Jack Torrance in the film, he's Jack Nicholson in real life. You know to a degree that it's not a mistake that they have the same names, right? And so that there's something going on with the name play. And so when you see the bartender who serves Jack his drink, who's supposed to be an apparition, right? Like. His name is Lloyd, and so by connection, it's as if his son was serving him a drink on some level, like, or his son, through his ability to shine, is fucking with him, and so, like, or something along those lines, whatever. But that the holy man makes it a whole other level. If you take it that there's something that, like, he's literally being saved and he doesn't realize it, or in some way, like.
Right. Yeah, that's cool. I like that.
And you even have the idea of that what he wants from this character is a drink, has a very Christian element to it as well, or anti-Christ element, depending on how you want to view that. The idea of like him getting served the, it's almost like a Eucharist, right? Like getting served the blood of Christ.
Yeah. I mean, he's got to serve the hair of the dog that bit him, and he's the wolf, right?
Exactly.
He's Wolfman. He's Wolfman Jack.
which again, I mean, I've said this before, but this taking this back to the constellations, the fact that the dog star and the constellations of the dog Canis Major and the rabbit are next to each other. The dog is actually chasing the rabbit. You have the idea of, if, as you said, he's the dog, all this sort of stuff. I made the point that what we used to call the TV antennas were rabbit ears. So it was you received the message, you received the transmission through the rabbit ears. And even in the movie Contact, right, she's monitoring the antenna. Even though they're big satellite dishes, just by extension of Carol Ann receiving the message through the television, Jodie Foster kind of does the same.
Sure.
Incredible.
I always seen Danny as a dog chasing a rabbit. When he follows him into the maze and everything about it, like Danny wears the Bugs Bunny shirt, and repeated Bugs Bunny references, and then the whole 42 thing, summer of 42, he's got 42 on the Bugs Bunny shirt, letting you know that we're talking about rabbit hole. So like that in the first place, I always see it that way. Like, he's his prey, right?
I've mentioned this one Robert Anton Wilson lecture a few times over the last few weeks. It's called The New Inquisition. And in it, one of the things he talks about is the idea of rabbits being connected to UFOs. And, he actually makes the joke, and I obviously haven't tried to verify this information, but he says the first human being, or the first Earthling to be abducted by UFOs, was not a human being, but was a rabbit. And he explains that by saying that even before the UFO phenomenon really became a big thing in culture, that people were talking about getting abducted, the character Bugs Bunny was abducted by a UFO in an early Bugs Bunny cartoon. So he says the idea that the first Earthling to be abducted is a rabbit, but we can take this a step further and say it's not just a rabbit, but a cartoon rabbit.
That says, "What's up, Doc?"
That's exactly. That says, "What's up, Doc?"
So there's a repeated, I keep coming back to Gremlins, like, relating them to the Kleepo. So, like, I've been running with this whole Clefotix theme because that's what I've been studying and seeing places where specifically shells show up and, like, the cocoons of the gremlins, like, in their metamorphosis totally reminds me of, like, the idea of, like, the Clefotix shells, right? And so I like how Bugs Bunny used to relate to the gremlins, right? So he'd be like, even in the film, the first gremlins, there's like this scene where it's like they show the television set and it's like Bugs Bunny looking back and forth and he's like, could that have been a gremlin? And like, just like the idea too that the gremlins are fucking with the planes. I have another thing that I'm kind of looking at, like, what was that?
William Shatner who sees the gremlin on the plane in the famous Twilight Zone as well. The spaceman, the captain of the Starship Enterprise, is the one who sees the gremlin on the wing. I would be remiss if I didn't point out the other episode that of the Twilight Zone that William Shatner was in is where he's getting messages about the future from a little devil head. I don't know if you know the episode I'm talking about. He puts coins into the... He's sitting in a diner, and there's this little devil-headed you know, almost like a radio, almost like a, excuse me, not a radio 8-ball, and just like an 8-ball type thing. You ask a question, so like the movie Big, when he's, you know, he's got the Ask Zelda or whatever the fucking thing is, where you ask a question, then it prints out this little ticket that, you know, your wish is granted. Well, he keeps asking these questions about the future. Will this happen? And then it gives him a little answer. Then will this happen? So just going back to the Devil's Tower, you know, portents of the future, et cetera, et cetera. As well as the movie Explorers, which has Joaquin Phoenix and Ethan Hawke as these kids who go to outer space. And the first thing that the alien says to him when they get into outer space, the very first line the alien speaks is, what's up, Doc?
Nice.
Right. Which is what Tom Waits says to Dr. Parnassus when he's on the Anubis boat, and he sees the dead cow in the water. He looks at him and he goes, what's up, Doc? Couldn't be any more direct.
And Parnassus being the mountain. So the Devil's Tower being the mountain, Parnassus being the mountain.
Saying it literally to Apollo.
Yeah.
And so there, and then you have Jack in The Shining is actually Dionysus, and his son is Apollo. And so that's the joke of him needing a drink. He'd do anything for a drink because he needs his Dionysian fix, right?
Okay. So, Joe, remind me, you have the idea that it's Poseidon, Zeus, and Hades, Pluto, that are battling time, right? That Doc Brown is Zeus, Marty is Pluto, and then you have Neptune in the Under the Sea dance.
Yeah, that was kind of how I played with it, yeah.
Does there strike you as anywhere in that movie there being an Apollo figure? I wonder if the car isn't Apollo, because, you know, you have to think that the car is a character, and that
Apollo figure. I'm sure we could find one.
You know, Apollo is famous for riding his chariot around the sun, right? So you have or taking the sun around the sky in his chariot. It's an important thing. Even when I watched a little commentary. Director's commentary on Little Miss Sunshine, and they said at the end they had one ending for the movie, and then they realized that they didn't include the van again, this yellow van. They said they realized how that was one of the most important characters in the movie was the van, and that they needed to reintroduce this character. So in Back to the Future, using that same logic of the vehicle being a character in the movie, would the DeLorean not be one of the most main characters, if you will?
Yeah, I would think that it would. So I think you cut out what you were saying, that the DeLorean could possibly be a representation of Apollo. So
just throwing it out there, yeah.
Just throwing it out there.
The idea of you know, like Apollo being famous for his chariot, and the DeLorean being the chariot of the gods in Back to the Future.
Yeah, I think it's appropriate. You know, if Doc and Marty are traveling through time and, you know, getting closer to their own divinity in that way or being gods, then, yeah, the DeLorean is their chariot, I would say.
Hey, did you notice that in Back to the Future 2?
Makes sense to me.
Not to say Masonic in a conspiratorial way necessarily, but did you notice that in Back to the Future 2, it's only in one line that they give away Biff's home, like where Biff lives?
Yeah. And, okay. Yeah.
And Biff lives on Mason Street.
Yeah, it was on Mason Street. Yeah.
I just think that's so interesting.
Yeah, I tried to scour his lawn because he has like an old. He lives with his grandma and she decorates. Yeah. I don't know. Can you guys hear me, Alan? Can you hear me?
It's a little rough, but we hear you.
David.
Yeah, I can hear you.
I think we're getting a delay again, though.
Oh, you hear me? Okay. I thought that's cool. He was on Mason Street.
Oh. And you have, of course, his very
name. Because if everything's fine.
His very name being Biff.
So, yeah.
I think we're getting a delay. As you say, his very name being a Biff is like Hiram a Biff.
Totally.
Hey, guys, I was just curious. Have either of you heard of or yourselves connected the term rabbit to...
Oh, no.
The term rabbit to what?
I think he's really breaking up.
To rabbi. I think I'm lost out here.
Did you say connecting the term rabbit to rabbi?
Yes.
Yeah, my rabbi jokes about that. I refer to him as rabbit.
Is it? That's cool.
My joke, actually. He actually knew a rabbi that everyone referred to as rabbit. It was inevitable.
Yeah, just sort of curious if anyone had built upon some sort of profound connection. So.
Not that profound, other than like, rabbis go down rabbit holes.
Yeah. That's kind of profound.
Here's a really silly kind of stretching thing, but you know how you say end, A-N-D in Spanish? Like you want to say also would be E?
Yes.
So a rabbi E-T makes rabbit, like a rabbi plus the letter T. The rabbi from space. And what does rabbi really mean but teacher, right?
As far as I know, yeah. As we're talking, I'm looking at the subliminal synchrosphere, and he has so many references to Back to the Future, and he has an image of the window with the sports almanac, and next to it, he's, instead of focusing on Roger Rabbit, right in front of Roger Rabbit is a sign that says vintage 1982 original water still in bottle, which is water. But he's pointing out that 1982 is the year that Poltergeist was released, and that 1988 is when Carol Ann died, which is kind of weird. He's also pointing out that, so I'm thinking about while they're watching football, it being channel 42, this is the poster where it says channel 42, of Carol Ann. If you look closely,
absolutely, you don't have to look that closely. It's pretty damn clear
that they're watching is actually channel 10. And so that was the score of the game was 42-10. And then the only other time that they show, that I know of that they show the television set besides the time when it says 42, when she's out at the beginning, is when it says 2:37. And so that's fucking eerie. Saying. Sorry. It keeps coming up because I keep looking at it. And I really like that he has this whole thing of like what Back to the Future is, of like that you're like, you know, that this book tells the future. It tells the results of every major sporting event until the end of the century, and it was this sporting event that seems as though they were predicting.
And then it also connects to the Olympics via the Olympics are the sporting events.
Yeah, totally.
So the idea of, especially when you mentioned the whole Rick Clay thing, the idea of connecting to a future Olympic ceremony or something is pretty interesting.
Yeah, for real. Yeah, it's super interesting. I was looking at they connect. He doesn't make this connection. He makes one connection of the dog and the heart, that this house has many hearts, and there's literally hearts throughout the whole house, like over and over and over again. If you're looking closely in Poltergeist, you'll see all these hearts. But then the dog looking up at the hole that the Poltergeist came in through, and then he keeps barking at it. He's equating this with Amit, or Amet. So the judgment in the heart, like Amit holds the heart in the Egyptian, but it's a crocodile painting. and I had sent you guys Crocodile Dundee when you were talking about Oz being the Down Under, being like Oz is Australia, and then it's the underworld, and how like Crocodile Dundee like shows up in New York and like pulls apart the buildings like in the poster and everything. It's kind of interesting. I don't know, because he's a dog head. A crocodile-headed dog creature.
Yeah, I just watched last night. I watched from the first season, the second episode of Futurama. So this is like 1999, I think. And there, he wants to go exploring on the moon, and he takes the rover out and is going across the moon. And when he jumps this crater, you see, the only animals you see. He jumps this crater, and these crocodiles wearing space helmets jump up out of the crater and try and, you know, snap. It's a play on that old TV show, Dukes of Hazzard. But it's basically he jumps. They show crocodiles on the moon on what I just saw last night.
Huh.
Also, it's a loose connection to gators.
Yes, of course. Of course. Star gators, alligators. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, man.
Well, what do you guys think of taking a break here for today? I would always be very, very happy to speak to you again, Joe, so we can do this again at a future date, maybe when there's a better Skype connection and... but I think we've been doing this for about 2.5 hours, and I think let's sort of clip it here, and maybe we can pick this up at a later date.
Yeah, that's cool with me.
And what I think might be fun to do for next time, because just like you, Joe, I'm also not well versed in poltergeist. And then we're all sort of talking about different pieces of media that we each have different familiarity with. What I think I would like to start doing is, like, if we plan out that we're going to do a show together in advance, maybe all pick something to watch and then dive into that, and we all have it fresh in our minds, a common sort of context to do. It just seems like it would be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think that would be great.
More and more, I'm discovering the value of just, like, if you sit down to watch a movie, just have a notepad handy.
Mm-hmm.
More of a point of it, because like when I go on to do this show, I'm like, well, I'm doing this show, I should have some bullet point things that I find especially new and interesting to talk about, because a lot of times the show will end and I'll be like, I forgot to mention a bunch of stuff that I wasn't necessarily as enthusiastic about, and I somehow miss the things that I was. So when we do that, it'd probably be a good practice just to have some things to go into. So.
Absolutely. Yeah. All right, guys. It's been...
Yeah, I like that. I really like the idea of everybody watching the same movies.
Yeah.
Well, if you see something that strikes your fancy that you'd like to, give a homework assignment to everyone, and same goes for you, David. If there's something that's speaking to you guys, throw it out there and we'll make that happen.
All right. So Sarah Silverman, Jesus is Magic, next time.
I'm in.
Is it? All right. Does she pull the rabbit out of the magic hat?
Pretty much. It's oh, whoa. We were talking about Twilight Zone. I just remembered that in the Twilight Zone movie, which they do it also in the original show, where they pull the fucking rabbit out of the hat. It's fucking terrifying. It's like this fucked up, crazy ass rabbit. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Cool.
That's scary.
All right, guys. Be well. I'll talk to you soon, okay?
Guys, thanks. I appreciate you having me on.
Oh, please. Anytime, man. I love talking to you. It's been a real pleasure.
Yeah.
Thanks, Alan. Thanks, David. Appreciate it, guys.
Bye.
Dare above a lonely feather, circles to the ground.
else don't make a sound. Turn this car around. Turn this car around. I'm going back. Green and gray in Auburn, sliding down the sky. The devil winks an eye. Doorway, shouldering the blame. This ain't without a name. Turn this car around. Turn this car around. I'm going back. Turn this car.